Okay, we're in Ephesians chapter 6, and we've just been through, we've just covered a section, almost a mini-series, on marriage. And the last time we really went into detail on this was, I think, January of 2004. And we did much more detail that time than we did this time. So, if something was touched with you and you feel like you need to a little more, then I would encourage you to go back and catch up with those messages. And the first, I don't really remember, maybe 6, 7, or 8, were on marriage. And the next 4 or 5 were on raising children. So, but every now and then we need a refresher. And there's no way that we can cover what... I'm going to leave something out today, is what I'm telling you. So there will be gaps, because we're really just going to spend one session on this that has to do with parents and children, and possibly, if we get to it, your jobs, your work, what God calls you to there. So if I leave something out, if you don't get the whole picture, then please go and double check and revisit those things. So we'll just be able to hit the basics today. If you missed the series for the last 3 weeks on marriage, then whether you're married or single, I would encourage you to go back, not because some great teacher was teaching, but I really believe that God used it and that He empowered and communicated with us through His Word. So I think there's something there for you. So we all need a refresher from time to time, a review on marriage, on the family, on children. So I would encourage you to go back and get that. And one thing that conclusion we came to last week, submission and headship. To do either one of those in the way we're called to do them in the family, the husband and wife, revival is required. You got to be right with God. If you want to lead the way God has called you to lead, it requires repentance, daily dependence on God, and living for Him. That is the only way that you can lead as we're called to lead as Jesus led. If you want to be if you want to really submit to your husband, to be a helper, how can you do that in your own strength? That's not possible. It requires a revival of you being right with God. And we particularly last week talked to the men. There are repercussions if you don't do your job. Not just in your family, but in the church and in society. There are repercussions, men, if you don't do your job. If you're not willing to lay down your life, your needs, your wants, for the benefit of your wife. And what's the thing? What was the thing? Do you remember? Why did Jesus lay His life down for the church? Do you remember? That the church would be sanctified, be made holy. In the same way, husbands are to lay down their lives that their wives would be made holy. They'd be right with God. They'd be walking with God. They are to lay down their lives for that. Put her needs above your own and be willing to lead as Jesus led. In humility, but to take leadership. We looked at a quick fix for marriage. You remember that? If you want to just go and practice something at home today that would help your marriage. Now, more needs to be done. We looked at the core issue is deeper and all-encompassing, but you want a quick fix? Then go home and practice this. Love and respect. If you want to know what love is, go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and read what love is. Husbands, love your wives. Be patient. Be gentle. Wives, respect your husbands. That was from last week. That was the quick fix. Wives, respect your husbands. Husbands, love your wives. Again, a reminder, we must be careful what we ask her to sacrifice for, men. We do not ask her to sacrifice just to meet our need. We ask her to sacrifice for the purposes and the cause of Christ. We can do that. We can ask her to give up some comfort, some security and those things for that purpose, but not so we can just pursue our own selfish desires. Okay. That was your quick and easy overview. Now, we'll head into, chapter 6. Children, obey your parents. Have a small audience today. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first command with a promise, that it may go well with you, that you may enjoy long life on the earth. So why is this so important? Why is this so important? This is a big deal. Why would he jump right into this? Children, obey your parents. In each one of these, he headed right into submission first. He's asking for something here. Who is it written to? You have to consider, is this written to the parents? Is this written to children? Who is this written to? Children, obey your parents. And notice this. Parents and children. If this wisdom is heeded, if this is honored, children, obey your parents, your whole life on this earth will be different. That is a heck of a promise. Children, if you obey your parents, if you honor your parents, then your whole life on this earth will be different. Look for yourself. That's what it says. Now, I like it that he says this directly to the children. And there is a power in the word, even if there's not full understanding. So I think it would be great to read this to a child, even if a child cannot read. This would be a good thing to read. If they can read, it'd be good for them to read it for themselves or to hear it. There's a power in the word, even when there's not a full understanding. And to those children, a promise is given. Things go better when you obey. I've repeated that. I got a hold of this thing like a couple months ago. And I started repeating it. Yeah, things go better when you obey. Things go better when you do things God's way. When you do things right. Things will go better for you. And this is a promise to children specifically. So, there's a major task though, is implied and given to parents. Do you want things to go better for your children? Do you want them to have a long and a good life? Do you want them to have a long and a good, prosperous life? Then what can you do? What is the most foundational thing that you can do for them to help them in their life? You can teach them to obey. Because really, I don't think it's directed just primarily at children. Because it's the parents' task to make sure that this takes place. It's not just for the ease of the parent or for the long life of the child. Although that's a huge benefit, isn't it? The ease of the parent. That's a huge benefit that can really take some anxiety out of your life if you have a child that obeys. But before we even get to the importance of this command, this is a primary and important command. Children, obey your parents. Really, it's about submission. Submit your will to your parents. Parents, make sure your children submit their will to yours. Make sure that this happens in their life. This is of primary importance that this happens. But before we get to the importance and why that's so important, this is not, let's get briefly at what it's not referring to. It's not referring to a bunch of rules to be followed. You see, this obedience requires love and truth from parents. That means it requires that kind of affectionate love, relationship love, but it also requires discipline. It requires a combination of those two things. This is how they know they're loved. Love and truth. Remember back in chapter 4, verse 15 of Ephesians, speaking the truth in love? Truth without love is brutality. Think about if you've tried to, in all relationships that's true, think about any time you've tried to correct someone, whether your child or a friend or anyone, and you've tried to do that without love. How well does that go? That doesn't go over well. It's no guarantee it goes over well even when you do it in love. But how well does correction without love go? That does not fly. It doesn't work in any relationship. And it's difficult enough when you are showing love. So, That's of primary importance in children obeying. It must be with love and with truth. Now, love without truth, or you could say love without discipline, just showering love on another person without discipline, without truth, encourages self-rule in that person. It encourages pride and self-rule in them. That's true both in the church and in the family. Love without discipline encourages self-rule. Self-rule, I'm speaking of as a negative thing. That living for self, to please self. And it even encourages rebellion. Even though the rebellion may be quiet rebellion. It's the spoiled child or the person that knows how to get everybody to cater their needs. And nobody ever really honestly speaks the hard truth in love to them. And that person grows in their self-rule to a point where they are unapproachable. That happens. It just continues. So, obedience is to come out of a relationship, not the law, not a bunch of rules. Now think of this in the terms of your relationship with Christ. Is that your obedience to Christ flows out of a relationship. That's grace. The law is trying to obey a bunch of rules without a relationship. So, without going into a lot of detail, what we want in our homes is a grace-based home, not a law-based home. And so just like our obedience to Jesus flows out of a relationship and not the law, our children's obedience must flow out of a relationship and not the law. Discipline out of a love relationship develops wisdom. That's what should happen from discipline. It should happen in discipline in the church. It should happen with correction among friends. Wisdom comes out of disciplining a child out of love. You see, they need to know, children need to know that they don't live like the world. That we are different from the world. We don't talk like that. We don't act like that. We don't go to the same places. We don't do the same things. But they also need to know they're not better than them. There's not a superiority complex. So, what do you look for to know if there's love and discipline out of a relationship rather than the law? You look for the fruit of humility and mercy along with a holy life. Does that make sense? Humility, the fruit of mercy, compassion, along with a holy life, living different than the world. Now that does not usually happen in a home that's based on just rules. Just a law-based home. A law-based home produces little Pharisees who think they're better than everybody else. Now that is a common thing that you can see that in the church. Law-based homes, and it produces little Pharisees who think they're just a step above all their friends and the rest of the world. They don't have a compassion and a mercy towards the lost. Be alert to this. Be alert to this in your children. I'm not saying just because it happens once, oh my goodness, you're failing. But it needs to be corrected. You need to make an adjustment in how you're handling discipline. If you see little Pharisees growing up. So, back to our original question. Why is this so important? This is an important issue. Learning submission. It is of a critical nature, even to you as an adult and to me. So, what is the primary reason people do not follow Christ? What is the primary reason people go off? They get away from God. What is it? What is the primary reason for dullness in a relationship with God? What's the primary reason for sin? Self-rule. That's what it is. A lack of submission. I want to be in charge. I don't trust anyone else to be in charge. It's the very foundation of sin. That attitude. You can see all sorts of signs and fruit of it. Of not trusting people. Of just this. There's just a self-rule attitude. A self-focus. There are varying degrees of this even in the world. Even on non-believers, there are varying degrees of this. There must be, because even in a non-Christian home, if there's been no discipline, you see, there must be some taming of self to even function in the world and in all relationships, from marriage to a job. And you know the ultimate thing. You know, a person that's a fully self-ruling is going to find the place of no freedom. That person finds himself in prison, in jail. They find themselves without a relationship. They find themselves on the street. That's like extrapolated out. Now, just because a person is not in that situation doesn't mean they don't have a problem with self-rule, for sure. But their self has to be tamed even to operate in normal relationships, much less to know God and serve Him. But of course, the ultimate goal is not to operate in society. The ultimate goal is a relationship with God, which requires full and complete submission like no other. What do you think keeps you from following Jesus with your whole heart? What do you think it is? I've just told you. It's a lack of submission to God. It's self-rule. I want to be in charge. I want to make the rules. I want to make my own rules. Well, God doesn't accept that. That's not what you were made for. It's self-rule, a lack of surrender. So, don't put this barrier in your child's path. You see, when you do not discipline your child with love, out of a relationship, you're putting the barrier of self-rule. Even if you have a law-dominated home, you're putting the self-rule in there of that Pharisee attitude. So you're putting a barrier in front of them from being able to submit to Christ. The submission we are talking about does not beat someone down or turn them into a zombie, not able to think for themselves. In fact, it's the only place we will find real freedom is understanding this submission and then applying it to God. And as I just said, we will become a slave to Satan or a slave to our own sin nature if we have self-rule. That's what happens. That's where it goes. And looking at the extremes we just talked about, that gives you just an example of that. Somebody that can't submit to anyone, and that's where you end up. If you desire your child to have a long and full life, good relationships, then you must teach them obedience. You must teach them self-control, which is different than self-rule. It starts with submission to you. That's where it starts. That's why this is so basic here. Children, obey your parents. You teach them to submit to you, but always keeping in mind the primary purpose, not to make your life easier or even to make their life easier. The primary purpose is submission to God and them giving themselves fully to Him and His purposes. And His purposes, not their own. Some people would call that cruelty. They call it unloving. But I would have to differ with that based on God's Word. This is the life God designed for them and that He will bless with joy and purpose. If you go back all the way to Adam and Eve, their design was not self-rule and to live for themselves. Their design was to live in dependence on God. And this is the most basic thing that we can teach our children. So why didn't he say here, parents, love your children? Why didn't he say that instead of children, obey your parents? Now, Caleb's been getting into this animal planet thing here lately. We just discovered this, really, that we had this on the TV. and he was watching this show yesterday. There's this mama grizzly bear. And she's on the bank of the river and she has two cubs with her and they're eating on a dead elk or something there. And it's getting ready for hibernation and all the bears are wanting to fatten up. So here comes this male grizzly. Now, you don't have to know much about bears or animals to know that there's nothing much more fierce, dangerous than a large male grizzly. There's not another carnivore that can stay in the ring with a male grizzly. I won't go into that, though. I could. So here comes this big boy. He wants what's left of that elk and possibly even the cubs is what he wants. So he's going to saunter over here and take it. So here he comes across the river, and Mama warns him, don't cross the river. But he crosses the river anyway. Big boy, confident. Here he comes. Look out. Because Mama wasn't having any of that. And it was not a, rawr, get out of here. It was full on, full fledged, get a hold of him, knock him down, hold him under the water type of thing. She took him out. Took him out. Sent him packing. A little while later, I guess his pride got to bothering him a little bit, so he comes back. He's going to revisit the situation. She tells him, don't cross the river. This time, she didn't even let him get his feet wet. She crosses the river. I've never seen anything. You ever seen two grizzly bears standing up and fighting? I mean, she was going for all she was worth. She wasn't just standing there. She's driving forward with her legs, takes him down, takes a big roundhouse and hits him in the head, knocks him to the ground. He didn't come back. Mama loved her children. Nobody had to tell her that. If that's true about grizzly bears, what do you think about human beings that are committed to their children? So I'm going to make an assumption here as we teach this. You love your children more than Mama Grizzly Bear. So that would tell us guys something here. But you love your children. So let's just assume that. You know, there's a commitment that love follows commitment, particularly with human beings. And so your love for your children is a committed love that does not rely merely on emotion. Because some days you don't feel love for your children. If you haven't experienced that, then maybe you haven't been a parent for very long. But there's some days you don't really feel much love for your children. In fact, that thing about the long life, you really want to use that, that I'm going to shorten your life today. So that's the emotion. But there is our love for our children is not reliant upon emotion. It's reliant upon our committed love. And that we're willing to do the hard stuff, like teach obedience. That's hard stuff. But we're willing to go through it and to teach it. But there's so much more that you need to teach your children than obedience. And I'm only going to mention those things today. Because all we have time for and what we have directly in front of us is children obey your parents. And I believe implied there, submission. There are other things like dependability, kindness, courage, helpfulness, moral purity, just plain old education, and many other character issues that we need to teach. But in this one verse, there's a foundational issue, and there's one specific thing that's brought out. And if we haven't done it, we need to go back and revisit it. And if you have grown children and you didn't do it, then you need to go back and deal with it, possibly. And say, I'm sorry I didn't teach you this. This is something God told me to teach you, and I failed you. This is what I've learned in my own life. I hope you can still get it. This is my prayer for you. I let you down, but God can fill in the gap when there's repentance and there's personal obedience and your own submission to God, and then they can get some benefit from it, even as grown children. So, you know, it's never too late with God. Don't you love that? It's never too late. He's merciful. So first of all, we train our children in obedience. That's one of the first things, primary things that we have to do. Now, obedience, it's not through punishment. Okay, now, it's maybe through what we commonly think of as punishment, but I want to change, if you think like this, I'd like to change your thinking this morning and think of it as correction. So if you think of classic, we'll get into this in a minute, but classic timeout or let's say a spanking. That's not punishment. It's you used it for correction. If you're using it for punishment, it might be that you vent your anger and you make them pay for what they've done. But that's not how God handles you. God disciplines. He corrects you. He corrects you. He uses these things to train you. And that's what we need to use those things as training discipline is a teaching tool. So you calm down and think about it. These things are in our hands as teaching tools, an opportunity. So when there's disobedience, rebellion, there's defiance, don't go, oh, I'm going to crush this, or I can't deal with this today. It's an opportunity. It's an open door for teaching. And that needs to take place with that frame of mind. It's a time to teach. It's an opportunity for training. Now, it has some similarities to punishment. For instance, when the teaching time is over, fellowship is restored. When there's been disobedience in the home, there's a separation in fellowship in there. Everybody knows it. There's just, you know, the child's done something wrong, they're ashamed, you're mad, you know, so after the teaching time, fellowship is restored. You don't stay in that separated thing for the rest of the day or for an hour or for whatever. This fellowship is immediately restored. And that's one reason to deal with things immediately. Now, one way we teach obedience, and we forget this sometimes, is positive reinforcement. When you obey, good things happen. Wasn't that just told? That's scripture, right? When you obey, you have a long life. When you obey, good things happen. So it's okay to teach your children like that. Use positive reinforcement. Hey, if you eat all your oatmeal, get your turkey sausage. That was a real life example. If you do this, good things happen. You get to go here. Now you have to always follow through on those things, but use that. Man, that's a lot more fun than the other stuff. So use positive reinforcement. God uses that with you, whether you know it or not. He uses those. He blesses you. You go, wow, thank you, Lord. Yeah, that's how He is. He wants to do that, just like you want to do that for your kids. So, don't reinforce wrong behavior with reward, though. What's an example of that? Why do your kids whine? Why would a kid whine? Because you've given a good result for their whining. They got what they wanted. Somehow your attention, or somehow you get whatever it was. Their whining produced a positive result from you, so you train them to whine. We're all guilty, so don't anybody crawl out of the room. So have you been trained? Have you been trained? Has your child trained you in this area? So teamwork is a must here. Right? Other people that deal with your children, that watch your children, that help you out, somehow, I know this can be difficult in some situations, some circumstances, but for all that you can, teamwork, where grandparents, everybody, if you have day, whatever it is, everybody's on the same page. You communicate, you find out what's going on, you see how they behave that day or that time in children's church, and you find out how you both can work towards resolving it. Everybody's a help, hopefully, or they shouldn't be too involved. Get on the same page. But we also know that negative reinforcement is required. I think everybody here recognizes that that works also. Now, there's some room for being pragmatic here. Pragmatic means just doing what works for your child. Every child is different. You have to do what works for your child. Timeout works great for some kids. Some kids could care less. Doesn't even dent them. So you got to figure out what works for your child. There's a purpose in discipline. It's training and correction. So if you don't have a change of heart, your discipline is not working. You need to do something else. Maybe change your attitude. Let's say if you spank in anger and all it does is make your child angry. Well, you've made an error. You've made an error that needs to be apologized for, corrected, a change of behavior. One of the most basic things a child needs is obedience. And therefore, a refusal to obey must be dealt with. You can't ignore it. You can't skip over. You can't deal with it later. A refusal to obey is rebellion in the heart. And that heart must be trained and disciplined. Don't be shocked or surprised when this happens, or you thought you had it down and it happens again. Rebellion must be dealt with. It's a time for discipline, teaching, training, not a time for you to explode with anger and yell and scream and all that. It's a teaching time. Now, It's a battle of the wills, but you must win it. You must win it. The ideal time to win it is before they're 6 or 7 years old and earlier. That's the ideal time to win it. That's not the only time it can be won. Let's go here to Proverbs 23:13. Do not withhold discipline from a child. Do you realize to withhold discipline is you're harming your child? Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish with them with the rod, he will not die. If he gets a spanking, it will not kill him. In fact, it will soften the heart. Well, we'll talk about spankings in just a minute. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death, just like it fits in with that Ephesians, that they're going to have a better life if they learn how to submit. And what he's saying here is the rod, a spanking, teaches them how to submit. It may be some other form of discipline. I mean, it could be some. It, certainly, every form, every time, it doesn't need to be the rod every time. Hopefully, it's rarely. But whatever form of discipline it is, there needs to be a result from it, or it has not accomplished its purpose. Punish him with the rod and save his soul. My son, if your heart is wise, then my heart will be glad. You see, he's talking to his son here, who's just been punished. My inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. So, there's something here. Along with discipline is communication. It's not just this punishment without an explanation, without communication. The heart must be softened. Now, let me just give you just an example here. This is really practical, and I know most of you, your kids are getting older now and all of that, but I think it's worth going over, though, just briefly, is that wrong has been done. There's been defiance of the heart, and you're pretty sure nothing's going to work. You know, timeout's not going to work because you see the stance of that little, you know, 25-pound kid. He's going to defy you. He's going to take you on. So you know something has to be done. You have to get to that heart. So here is just an example. Is that you say, you know what, son, that's the example here in Proverbs. I love you. And I love you too much to let you go down this wrong path. Even if they're two, they can understand these words. They'll get a flavor for it. And I really don't want to do this. But what's going to happen here is you're going to get a spanking. And this is the reason why. I told you to do this, and you refused to do it. You rebelled against me as your parent and authority. I'm going to spank you. And it's going to hurt. If it doesn't hurt, it doesn't do its job. Sorry. There's no point in it. If you're the one that just, and you swat them as they go by, you better not do that again. You've hardened their heart. If you smack them upside the head, it hurts, but you've hardened their heart because you haven't done it in the right way. If you lash out in anger, you've hardened their heart and you haven't done it in the right way. Love and discipline. Love and truth. You tell them what's going on. Here's a good idea. You tell them how many whacks they're going to get. Okay, this is severe. This is 3 whacks. This is 4 whacks. And ideally, pretty practical here, a switch rather than your hand. Something that puts a stinging on. Not a long-lasting hurt. That's what bottoms are made for. They can take it. They can take it. So, you don't do it through, you know, 2 layers of Pampers. It's a bare behind. That stings. That's, if the heart didn't soften, you probably did something wrong. That is the most teachable moment you will find fresh off of a discipline. There's tears, there's hugs, and they're very well, there better be hugs after. I love you. I want you to obey. I want you to follow God. I want your heart softened. You know, those words said often enough will get into the heart. And they'll know that's how God deals with them too. That God loves them. He disciplines them. He doesn't let them go far before they get the rod of correction. That may put a little fear into them from going astray from God. They know God won't let it happen. He's going to deal with that disobedient heart. It's a good lesson for them to have. Look for submission. Right? Look for submission or you're not done. Okay? You got to repeat the process. You got to go back through it. You got to be patient. You got to win the battle of the wills at every turn. Look for submission, or it's not over. It's not over. The teaching time is not over until the soft heart has taken place. Now, you got to be careful here. Some people cannot spank. Okay, I'll tell you. Some people should not spank. You have a real problem with anger? Somebody's ever had a problem with child abuse or that sort of thing? Then let somebody else do it. You stay away from doing anything that's going to harm your child. But a spanking done in the right way is not harmful to a child. You can read it right there in Proverbs. There's some more verses that we'll look at. Check your attitude when it doesn't work. Something might need to be adjusted. Proverbs 22:15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child. Maybe the folly never got out of your heart. Maybe you never had a spanking. I'll see you after church. No, just kidding. I might need a little backup here. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child. It may still be bound up in your heart. And God's been disciplining you, trying to drive the folly out of your heart. And you hadn't been listening. You hadn't been listening. Maybe you got it treated wrongly. Maybe you got abused. Maybe you got mistreated. Maybe you got ignored as a child. And the folly was just entrenched into your heart. And God's been dealing with you, trying to drive the folly from your heart. And you think all those things going on in your life are just accidents or God's cruelty. God's loving discipline saying, submit to me. I'm looking for a soft heart. I'm not done with you. I want to see some submission from your heart. Are you going to cross the bridge again and again? We'll keep doing it till I take you home. Is that the life you want? He will drive submission from your heart. One day your knee will bend before God, and I hope it's not before you go to the grave. Your heart will submit to God. He is the boss, and He'll get it one way or the other. One way or the other, He's going to get it out of you. Let's do it in this life. Let's do it in this life. Submit to God. Submit to God. Let Him drive the folly from your heart. Surrender your will to His. Follow Him with your whole heart and live for Him, or you have a troubled life ahead of you. You do. Maybe you've already had a troubled life. Maybe you need to investigate, examine. 13:24. So don't put your children in that situation just because you had it. He who spares the rod hates his child. You know, we could add from what we just learned there. He who doesn't use the rod, use discipline with love and truth in the right manner. He who withholds that kind of discipline, the right kind of discipline from his child, he hates his child. It's not loving to withhold discipline from your child. But he who loves him is careful to discipline him. Well, God loves you. How do you think he's going to deal with you? Supposed to be about children this morning, wasn't it? Sorry. We won't go there, but Hebrews 12, 5 and 6 talks about how God disciplines his, he doesn't withhold discipline from you, from his child, from an adult. And that it's kind of, if you discipline your children in the right way, they can have a living parable. When they think about God's discipline of them, they can see it in the right way. Again, discipline is not yelling and humiliating and crushing a child. That is not discipline. That doesn't make a boy a man and all that kind of stuff. Doesn't make them tougher. Hardens their heart. Yelling, humiliating, crushing a child is not discipline. It's harmful. It's harmful. They'll carry that with them the rest of their life. It does not produce godly submission of the heart. In fact, it produces rebellion in the heart. Right discipline is respectful, but firm. Even though the child has been disrespectful to you, you do not, in turn, act disrespectful towards them. You show them respect and honor, but firmness, and they'll know who's in charge. But you do not do it with humiliation, yelling, screaming, all that threat of violence. So, will a child learn to live under the authority of his parents and of God, or under his own authority? If he lives under his own authority, it's going to be like slavery his whole life. Slavery to Satan, slavery to sin. If this grows and it takes root, it will grow a rebellious teen and a self-centered adult whom no one will rule. And that's not a compliment, to not be ruled by anyone. That's not a compliment. Proverbs 29:15. How about verse 1, maybe, of Proverbs 29? A man who remains stiff-necked after many rebukes will suddenly be destroyed without remedy. You don't want your child to go down that road. And verse 15. The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother. With discipline, a child sees and feels the foolishness of rebellion. And it brings wisdom and humility. Correct discipline brings humility and wisdom. Let's go to Hebrews 12:11. You might say, no kidding. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Do not withhold those things from your children. And if God is trying to teach you those things through His discipline, quit fighting it and submit your will fully to His. You know, sometimes discipline with a child is like, I used to do ropes courses. I've told you all about that, where you take, like, say, I've done everything from group homes to corporate executives to church groups, and you give them a task to solve, you know, and they have to work together to solve that task. And we've done it some with some of you guys where everybody's blindfolded and you have to communicate and figure out what you're going to do and accomplish something together. And what happens is you, in about 20 minutes, you can bring out all the difficulties, say, some people in offices had working together. It took a year to discover who the problem was and who was, who's treating people terrible and, you know, who won't communicate. In about 20 minutes, you can find it all out right there, because there it is. It condenses it, real life, into this kind of manageable unit. You can talk about it and deal with it. Well, discipline kind of does the same thing. Because if somebody's not disciplined, then later on, they're going to have what real price is there to pay if a kid doesn't make his bed? There's not a whole lot of consequences for that. The parent has to institute artificial consequences to prepare them for, when you do the wrong thing later, real consequences come in. So you kind of, it's this thing you do, you bring it down into a manageable unit and you kind of make it happen, because it's your responsibility to do that, like a ropes course facilitator. You make things happen. So you give negative consequences when they do things wrong. You have a responsibility to do that. The reasonable goal here, what we're looking to accomplish in both your children and in you with God, listen to this, is obedience without challenge, excuse, or delay. Without challenge, excuse, or delay. You see, delay maybe is a tactic of control, okay? Excuse is a control tactic. I'm not obeying right away because I'm going to obey when I feel like obeying. And that means you really haven't told me what to do. I've decided for myself. Nanny, nanny, boo-boo. Now, you're not aware of all this, Mom and Dad, because I got it. I'm in control. I'm ruling. Now, I'm not going to say that out loud because you might hit me upside the head, but I got it in here. I got it in here. And so I know I'm standing up on the outside, but I'm sitting down on the inside. I'm doing what I want to do. You're not the boss. You're not the boss of me. You see that in the eyes. Come do this. Yeah, okay. Fine. Come do this. Sure. Yeah, I will. Who's in control? Who's obeying? Somebody's not obeying. There's no submission of the heart. There's not. Even if it's done under duress, it's responded to in the last nick of time before something happened. They've decided when it happens. They're in control. No submission No true obedience has happened, even if the deed got done. Still, well, let me talk about this briefly. That, I know this doesn't apply to most of us here, but it may enlighten us somehow. There's the spanking years. Now, in general terms, you could say the spanking years, this is very general, okay? Very, very general. Sometimes you got to cross the line, way over a line. But say from 2 to 6, 7, 8. Do you notice if you, when you, usually your children are kind of growing out of spankings, you, just naturally, you know, in that age of 7, 8, maybe not 13, you know, 14, children are growing out of spankings. They should be growing out of spankings. That should be happening. So, now I'm not saying that there's not some discipline that needs to take place before 2. I think there is. When you get the arching of the back and doing things that are dangerous, but they're going to do them anyway, that's different. You have to have discernment to know the difference between curiosity and exploring. And those things should not be squelched. There should be freedom for somebody crawling around on the floor. That exploring, curiosity, childlike inquisitiveness. But you have to know the difference between that and miniature defiance. Miniature defiance needs to be dealt with. Even in the smallest of children, you have to do that appropriately. Maybe it's a little whack on the knuckles, reaching for the electric plug or whatever, but or something crossing the street. But miniature defiance even needs to be dealt with. You have to decide how to do that. So that's why I'm calling the spanking years. I'm saying 2, but really, discipline takes place long before then. You know, you don't let the arch of the back and the do whatever you want. You don't let that just go on without. That's going to happen, okay? It is going to happen. But somehow you have to get in there from the very first days and start dealing with rebellion, defiance. So then you get on to whatever. What are you? 8, 7, 8, 9. Those years following the spanking years of the rebuking years. You've already laid a foundation of softening the heart, of spanking. You've got a hold of it. You know that the threat means something because it's happened enough times during those years. So then the face-to-face rebuke, not yelling, screaming, humiliating, the serious rebuke. Then comes, after that, maybe getting into the teenage years, is a child is growing up. They're getting freedom. That should happen. There should be more and more freedom that comes as a child earns their freedom. Well, what happens when they act like a child is you retract freedoms. You take away their freedom. That didn't work. You take more. And you take more. They'll feel it after a while. When they respond with a soft heart, remember, same objective, you give them back. You give back those freedoms, the appropriate amount for their maturity. So, that's a really incomplete overview, but know the difference between childishness and disobedience and manipulation. Other benefits of obedience? Let's go to John 14:21. Whoever has my commands and obeys them, he is the one who loves me. He who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love him and show myself to him. And verse 23, Jesus replied, if anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. My Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Obedience to God comes intimacy with God. Now, you don't earn your relationship with God. I don't have to explain that to you guys. We know that. It comes by grace, faith alone, and Christ alone. But in your relationship with God, if you want intimacy with Him, then you need to have obedience in your life. And you can learn that, and you can teach that to your children from the earliest age. And we won't go there. We're running short of time. Jesus Himself set the pace for obedience. It says there in Philippians, He was obedient even unto death. Every word He spoke was from the Father. Every action from the Father. He lived a humble and obedient life. He was our example. He set the pace. Ultimate obedience, where this is headed, is moment by moment reliance and dependence on God, abiding in Christ. That's where obedience takes you. That's the road you want your children to be on. I got to finish this. I know we're getting a little bit stretched out here. I thought I was going to get all the way into jobs and working and that, but we're not going to make that. That'll be next week. But let me finish the children. So, be patient. That was a request. Ephesians, back to Ephesians 6. Real quick, we'll try to skim through this. Verse 4. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, this could be, it says to fathers, it easily, when you look at this a little closer in the Greek, it could be applied to either one, but it seems to be more directed to the fathers, that all this is obviously related to the things we've just been talking about discipline, training, and instruction. Some versions will say nurture and instruction, I think, but really, a better translation here really is discipline, training, and instruction. That's what parents, and it mentions fathers specifically, that's what they are to be doing here. It's obviously the mother's responsibility too. The best way, your goal here in training and instructing children is not brilliance or material gain or social climbing or getting them out of, relieving them from sorrow and misfortune, but your goal is their loyalty to Christ and their yieldedness to Him in your training and instruction to them. A simple formula. Do something consistent. Just do something consistent. Doesn't have to be something huge. You know, that bedtime tuck-in thing can last a lot of years. That's a time for instruction and teaching. Maybe it's simple. You just read a Bible story. You talk about the meaning of the Bible story. You pray. That's training and instruction. That's what that is. You talk together. You open the Word. You have some time together. And you maintain an alertness to teachable moments. Dads, if you're not doing this with your kids, get on it. What else can I say? Don't just leave that to your mom. You know, that's a good thing. Moms are great at it. But do that with your kids. It says they're fathers. You know, I've kind of relieved you a little bit. I've said to parents, it is to both parents, but you can do it. And be sure they have a systematic study of the Scriptures somewhere in their life. That's children's church. It's something you implement. Just make sure they have a systematic, regular study of the Scriptures. And this includes being alert to spiritual conversation. That means you talk about what happened in children's church. You talk about the message. You can't start that kind of conversation at 12 or 13. You've already lost them. You need to be talking that at an early age. Talk about spiritual things. Talk about what they learned. Bring it up. Discuss the things that are going on in church. Talk about the worldview of a movie. Every movie has a worldview. Kids watch movies. Now, you need to be careful what movies they watch. But they have a worldview. Talk about the worldview. Watch movies like Chariots of Fire. I won't recommend some others. But there's a worldview to movies. Discuss that. Maybe it's wrong. Discuss that. Include them in your ministry. What ministry? Get a ministry. Start serving God. And include them in that service of God. Whether it's setting up chairs, whether it's doing, running, whatever it is, include them in your ministry and pray with them at the drop of a hat. Everything. Anything. You know, we've done that with Caleb, and then Caleb, well, he is the one doing the leading and praying. He always wants to pray. I forget, he prays. But they will pick up on this. They will pick up on prayer. You start that early, do it often. Do it over every, draw, just over any, just pray. Stop right there. Stop at the sidewalk. Who cares if people are looking? Just pray. Just sit down head to head with them and pray. It's impacting. For you too. Deuteronomy chapter 6. You know, we're not going to go there. Read that on your own though, please. If this is of any interest, this grabs you at all, read Deuteronomy chapter 6. It talks about what you just, how to share the Word. It talks about teaching precepts. It talks about relating to your children. It talks about sharing spiritual things. Read that and follow through. It says, do not exasperate your children. What does that mean? That means maintaining a grace-based home rather than a rule-based home when you really get down to it. Overdoing the rules exasperates children. Don't be petty. Have a relationship. Deal with the things that need to be dealt with. Don't drive them crazy with every little detail. Let them make some decisions for themselves. Give clear boundaries. You see, that exasperates too. when you're, they don't know where their boundaries are, or they change daily, according to your mood. Give clear boundaries, be consistent, do what you say you're going to do. Then you see how those things exasperate children. They exasperate you too, don't they? If you have to deal with those kind of things. But we have to get to that next week with jobs and work.